Mr.
Dennis,
Chair.
Did you want to make a presentation? Representative Van Loon?
Well, just will this become a more common practice? And if it does become a more common practice, it would certainly have an impact on ways and means, I would think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Van Loon, we don't intend for this to change current practice. We just intend to legalize what we are already doing and what we did honestly think we had the authority to do.
Okay, and then another question that relates
Certainly.
To this, on the question of emancipation, what happens to the monies for those who are younger than 18 who go through the process, and do they still get the support funds that they might have been getting otherwise, or do they become eligible for support funds that they didn't have prior to that? I know of several, a 16-year-old or two, and some 17-year-olds who have are supposedly out on their own.
This bill addresses solely those youth who are in placements in residential or day treatment services.
Okay.
It does not address any of the issues regarding emancipation or services for children who are not in such placements.
I'm aware of that, but I just ask you that question.
I wouldn't think that it would make have any impact on the services to other youth that are eligible for those services.
Not this particular bill.
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Right. Dennis Morrow, I'm the Executive Director of Janus Youth Programs, and I'll be very brief here today. I'm here to represent myself and I think the general provider community in supporting CSD and their efforts to get this law in sync with current practice. I think you probably have a rare opportunity to pass a law which is good for the state, which is good for kids, which costs no money, and which really has no viable political opposition right now. And my question would be, why wait? From our standpoint, we operate programs for emotionally disturbed kids, for delinquent boys and girls, and also a program for runaways. And we've been victims of downsizing of the mental institutions, of the penal institutions, and of the detention facilities. And you simply can't operate residential programs for kids without some flexibility in the age limit for the reasons that have been mentioned here. I have seen, during some of the funding cuts in 83, a point in time in my program where we were asked to take a boy who was 18 and severely emotionally disturbed, but not severely enough to qualify for adult services at the age of 18, to take him out of our group home and drop him off on Burnside with no further resources or contact. And I'm an advocate for a broader range of services to 18 to 21-year-olds in general, and I don't see this as broadening the range, but at least allowing us to continue those cases where it makes sense from a clinical standpoint and not simply put the youth out on the street.
Thank you. I'll close the hearing now on 2332 and open it on 2473. Are Bob and Monica Miller still out there?
I'm testifying.
Okay, why don't you come on up? Please identify yourself.
Yes. My name is Kathy Cochran, Fairview Parent Guardian Association Board. Monica Miller was in the hospital with the leg operation, so I'm reading her testimony to you. Dear honored members, as parents of a blind, multi-handicapped child who resides at Fairview, we feel qualified to speak on behalf of the parents concerning the parent pay issue. And the parent pay bill has been passed, and there are addendums to regarding this in other bills, and so we are addressing the parent pay issue. For many of us, the placement of a child at Fairview came after severe emotional and financial duress. Years of thousands of dollars for hospital and doctor bills, plus many life and death decisions, have left many of us emotionally and financially spent. Many of these financial and emotional wounds are healing because of the excellent care and concern extended by the administration staff at Fairview. The threat of parent pay and the enforcement of such a plan may well turn the emotional and financial tide for most of us. We appeal now to your sense of social concern for severely handicapped residents to lay to rest this threat to parents and residents alike. After much study and discussion of the parent pay issue, parents believe that a parent pay plan would be difficult to enforce, to bring in limited revenue, and generally not be cost effective. The negative aspects of such a plan for parents, residents, and the state outweigh any limited monetary advantages that might be gained. And Bob Cochran, president of the Fairview Parent Association, was asked by Representative Kopetsky's office to give testimony today. And because he is out of state, I am also bearing his testimony. Regarding this parent pay bill, we have been involved with this for some time. And for a number of years, this issue has surfaced again and again, each time calling together advocates, guardians, and parents to formulate presentations to you, to brief you on the statistical and the legal and the ethical issues involved. Now, for 2 years since this bill was passed, the families have been thrown into a limbo in not knowing when the axe was going to fall on them and being in the ridiculous position of having to hold back badly needed funds to cover payments of unknown quantity for an unknown period of time to be collected in an unknown future date. The visions of support enforcement, which haunted them before when the first parent pay issue came about years ago, is now back in their lives, and possible liens, which they said would never occur and which we have documented evidence has occurred in the past, and other enforcements being leveled upon them, have placed them in a really untenable position. Our question to you now, of course, is that if this bill was such a good one and fair for all in the first place, why was it not implemented in a fashion 2 years ago with no action proposed now for the foreseeable future? Even the authors of this bill are very uncomfortable with the ramifications they are telling us, and we have been in contact with them, and the fact that elements have been added which were not foreseen or indicated at the onset of its inception. And one of those elements, for your information, is that built into that initial bill was individual negotiation of amounts to be paid to the state. Now, this implies that the families involved would negotiate with bargaining skills what they would be paying the state. Now, taking this a step further, their education and their ability to present themselves and their financial situation under considerable stress before people they were not familiar with would also be an issue. So we have some things here that have concerned us, and the Fairview Parents and Guardians Association was contacted this last week and asked if they would care to testify before you. At that time, and in answer to our questions, other agencies or organizations equally affected had not been considered for testimony. The obvious response was, we had heard, that no one had thought of them and the impact upon the family which they represent, the impression being given that only Fairview families were involved with this bill. And as we all know, this is not the case. We urge the legislature to scuttle the parent pay bill and any addendums to any other bills which might come through, because it's become a disastrous hybrid, which we, even though we were involved initially in it, are now emphatically denying as worthless.
Okay. Any questions for this witness? Thank you.
What?
It is limited to
Fairview.
Welcome, Mike.
Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Kopetsky, State Representative, Marion Polk County's District 33. Just briefly, what happened last session was there was a bill, House Bill 2490, which came to the floor. I forget which committee. I spoke against it, testified against it, and I said then that if you look at the fiscal impact statement alone on this bill, look at what we're doing. We're going to collect money from parents, and keep in mind the very limited population that this bill, this issue is dealing with, and I've got people from the Attorney General's office to explain why that's the case. We're talking about parents with minor children under 18 years of age at Fairview who, for one reason or another, they have said, I'm not going to relinquish custody of my child, and I want that child out of Fairview. And what the state is doing here is saying, you're going to pay a cost of their care, around $300 a month or something like that effect. But when the bill came to the floor last session, the fiscal impact, and I've got a copy of it here, said that the collections from the parents would be $462,000, that we would lose some Title 19 payback funds, so you'd have to subtract $218,760 in federal funds that we would lose because we're getting some money from the parents. And then we're going to have to spend, the state is going to have administrative costs of $118,830 to administer this, in other words, to collect the $462,000, which would leave the state with a net gain of $124,410. So, you know, we're going to spend $300,000 to get $124,000, and this is ridiculous state government at its finest. So I voted against the bill, some others did. Well, and then we had it, as they said, killed over in the Senate. And that darn Ways and Means Committee, like 2 days or so, something like that, before the end of session, they gutted a bill, stuffed it. Representative Agron's knows how they can do that. And they stuck it in 2701, and the thing became law. And I didn't realize, and I ended up voting for it. Because I, you know, it's one of those things, last minute, and you vote yes, and because everybody in the committee had voted for it, and all that stuff. Okay. So what this bill does is it repeals the action that we took last session. They haven't collected a dime. It's hanging over these parents' heads. These are good people. They're involved in a parents' association out there. They do volunteer work out there. They do clothing drives. They put together a fundraising activity where they built their own recreation center. It wasn't a dime's worth of state or dollars involved at all. These are good people. They're involved with their kids out there. And I have somebody, John Ellis from the Attorney General's office, who will explain why this bill, in spite of the previous speaker's testimony, is limited to parents with minor children at Fairview.
John, you want to come on up?
Mr. Chairman, while he's coming up?
Right. Representative Agron?
Can I count on your testimony in favor of germanity the next time
next
I raise
session.
The issue?
You betcha.
That next session. That sort of thing will not happen in Ways and Means.
No, because you have a guardian down there now. Uh-huh. Protect against that.
I've heard that before, Mike.
Trust me.
Any other questions?
I've heard that before.
I've heard it too.
Okay. Representative Kopetsky? If not, John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is John Ellis. I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Support Enforcement Division in the Attorney General's Office. Representative Kopetsky explained fairly well, I think, how 2701 became the law last time. We had testified against 2490, pointing out that there were some serious problems with the bill, which would collect child support from the parents of kids out in Fairview and similar institutions. We thought that the darn thing was dead, and in the last 3 days of the last session, it got on a fast track. They got it in stuff 2701, and it became law. The problem with in the Attorney General's office was that we thought that there were serious, serious legal impediments to that law. There's a thing called the Educational for the Handicap Act, which, simply to paraphrase it, says that the public owes a free education to handicapped kids, whether it costs $1,000 a year or $30,000 a year. And these are handicapped kids who are getting trained and educated. And so I'm not an attorney. I must tell you, I'm a lay administrator. But we have lots of legal opinion in the Department of Justice that the Education for the Handicap Act is basically an impediment, an obstacle to collecting child support for these kids. After 2701 became law in July of 1985, the Department of Justice sat down with the Mental Health Division and with others in DHR and with the parents group, and we talked about it. And for 6 months we didn't do anything except for talk about it. And finally, in early 1986, the Department of Justice told the mental health people that we could not legally collect child support for these kids unless the Mental Health Division did an extensive screening on all these children and certified that, in fact, each particular child referred for this child support collection function was immune and not in the protected class. Mental Health Division could not jump through the necessary hoops to certify to the Department of Justice that the children were immune and not protected under the EHA. Finally, the Mental Health Division withdrew, unscheduled the money that they were given to run this program. The Department of Justice never spent a penny or collected a penny on this program during the current biennium. This bill, on its face, takes away the state's authority to collect child support for these children. The Department of Justice has no opinion on that, except for that it's probably a legally wise thing to do in given the EHA. What we do want to point out to you, and my testimony is it should be in your bill folders, is that the language that was inserted in 1985 to give the state authority to collect child support from these children in mental health institutions is general enough so that you might, if you were reading it for the first time and didn't know the history, you might think this took away the state's authority to collect child support for an entirely different class of kids, and those are the kids in CSD institutions, primarily Hillcrest and McLaren. I want you to know that during the last session, House Bill 2468, submitted by Legal Aid, addressed that central question. Should the state of Oregon collect child support from the parents of children who are, quote, incarcerated in Hillcrest and McLaren? Should we collect child support from those parents to reimburse the state for the expense of taking care of those kids in those institutions? The answer, apparently, was yes, because House Bill 2468 died. After some, we testified, in fact, in front of House Judiciary most of the time, and Representative Kopetsky was on that committee at that time, and we'll remember that discussion. We have, you know, we're enforcement people. We are the state's attorneys. We are hired, in this case, to do a certain job. We take no position on the bill, except for we want you to know, as far as CSD cases are concerned. If the legislature wishes the Support Enforcement Division to continue to collect money for certain children in CSD care, we will certainly do it. And we think that removing the language from the law that was put in 1985 gives us the continued authority to collect that money.
Does that make sense?
No.
Okay,
no,
let me see if I can. Up until 1985, the state of Oregon has collected from parents whose children are under the jurisdiction of the Children's Services Division at Hillcrest and McLaren up to, like, I think it's around $300 for cost of care of treating those children or of incarcerating those children. And I think the actual cost of care today is around $1,100. They're paying a part of it. In 1985, House Bill 20, but the state of Oregon did not collect cost of care from parents of children out at Fairview under the Mental Health Division. 85, Ways and Means gets this bill passed that says now we're going, in addition to CSD, we're going to collect from mental health parents. In order to do that, the language that you see on page, beginning at, on page 1 at the line 30, payments for care, that is now being deleted. That was the new language inserted in 1985, and it continues on page 2. We are deleting that language this year. 2 years ago, that was the new language inserted, which gave them the authority to collect from Fairview. So our legislative intent is that by repealing the new language of 85, we go back to our status of pre-85 session, i.e., yes, the state can collect from CSD parents. No, they cannot. They cannot collect from parents of Fairview.
Why?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Why?
Why should they not collect from Fairview parents?
Why should they? We should not, Mr. Chair, Representative Ford. One, there's some question as whether or not under 94-142 we should even try to, since most of the services, not all the services, could be considered related services under 94-142, and we, the state or school districts, have to provide those services freely anyway. Second, I don't think it's good policy for this group of parents of individuals, because I think they are contributing to the care of these children. And third, to try to collect $400,000 and really get $100,000.
Let's finish. Let's finish.
Mr. Chair, I do.
Representative Ford.
We've had a policy where we're trying to have more parents take care of their own children. And they take care of their own children, which is it's a drain on a family. And we don't require any kind of financial support for the parents who don't want to do that and leave their children for Fairview.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ford, these parents, they have the right, if they want, to relinquish custody of these children once they're at Fairview, and they choose not to relinquish custody. In fact, they do more than that. They're involved with their children.
Let me ask you a question, a follow-up on that. If they relinquish custody, what would happen then?
I'm sorry, the correct term is parental rights. If they relinquish parental rights, the state would pay for them.
Entirely?
Sure.
So they could walk away?
Yes, but they care not to.
Okay, so that would it be fair? Would it be fair to say that this is, by repealing this language, would it be fair to say that this is one way to continue to keep the parents involved in the process? Would that be a fair statement to say or an unfair statement to say?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think these parents will stay involved in the process regardless of whether they're faced with a bill of $300 or not, because they love their children. Otherwise, there's two different types of children we're talking about. The children under CSD, they're at McLaren or Hillcrest, are doing something wrong, bad in our society. The kids out of Fairview, they're there because they need the services that only Fairview can provide, but not
Mike,
even a local school district can provide.
Yeah, but my behavior being what it is, I'm not sure what the law is saying or what you're suggesting is that we whack the parents that have kids at McLaren, are unfortunate enough to have kids at McLaren, but not hit the ones that are unfortunate enough to have them at Fairview. I'm not sure I understand.
You can deal with that.
Understand that or agree with it.
You can deal with that in a separate piece of legislation.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Representative Van Leeuwen, I think, was kind of bouncing up and down over here and wants to ask the question.
Well, I have been, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Because by the time the two of them get through here, this has become an extremely complicated piece of legislation that I think we need a much better description for than we've had so far.
No, I think it's a very simple piece of legislation.
The question is whether you want to expand it to include CSD.
Yeah. No, I don't think that the feeling of the committee as I read them is to do that. Representative Vagron.
Well, it seems to me that, if I understand it correctly, and if I do, just that's fine and I'm good. I don't want to get too complicated. We stuck something in last time which simply has not worked, which was not cost-effective, which was going to cost too much to get some money for a small population that had previously been exempt, right?
And also illegal,
and
Mr. Chair.
Potentially illegal. So, and we just blew it last time in one small way, and what you're saying now is, let's put it back like it was. It doesn't change a thing we're doing with the other kids that are in CSD custody. but it's just simply this small population of kids at Fairview who are a different group.
300 max.
Different kind of group, a different kind of kid, a different kind of parent that has been swooped up in this net, and we've discovered that it was a mistake, they don't belong there, and we want to put it back like it was. Is that what this bill is all about?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Representative Benlow.
What population are we talking about?
Fairview.
No number.
Well, how many?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Van Leeuwen, 300 max, no more than 300 children are we talking about. And I must tell you, we're talking about Fairview, and that's where 85 to 90% of the children are, but there are also some private care group homes and things like that where Mental Health Division does pay for the care of children in facilities outside of Fairview. However, most of it's Fairview. We're using Fairview's shorthand description for this problem.
John, let me ask you another question to follow up on what Representative Agrons was saying. Even if we decide not to change the language, what you're telling me is that the Department of Justice has no intent of enforcing the law. Right? Because it can't.
It's a violation of the law.
Well, because they're caught between the federal law and the state law.
That's exactly correct, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Ford, did you have another question? So, I mean, no, philosophy has nothing to do with this.
Precisely.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it was a shame because I know a couple of families that have put their children in group homes. And these are people that are making around $100,000 a year in family income and pay no support for the child and just to palm the child off to a group home. And I think it's a tragedy that this occurs.
Mr. Chairman, and
legally it's supposed to occur.
Mr. Chairman, my point of being here today, I seem to have gotten stuck in a tar baby here, but a tar pit. But I was simply trying to point out that many people who read this bill said, that takes away your authority to collect money on CSD cases. And the Department of Justice said, if these intelligent people can read this bill and think that this takes away our authority to collect money on CSD cases, we better go to the committee and tell them that that's not what the intent of the bill is. That's the only reason I'm here today.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bentley.
Another question, I'm sorry.
That's fine.
One of the gentlemen, and I think it was Mr. Ellis, one of them referred to something about the school districts or the schools.
Yes.
Now, is that money, the money to support the child at Fairview, is it collected from the local school district, or why did you make that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Van Leeuwen, the law is 94-142, which is a federal law, and Oregon law, which is basically in compliance with the federal law, basically says that every child has a right to a free public education. Every child, handicapped or otherwise, is entitled to a free public education if they want it. The fact that the child is handicapped does not cancel their right to a free public education. So what you have is a child has some kind of a handicap. The parent takes the child to the local school district to enroll that child when the child is beginning the first grade, and the school district says we can't educate that child in this local community because this child has special needs. We can't do it. It then becomes the school district's job to place that child wherever the child needs to be placed so that the child can be educated, and it's at public expense. If the school district needs to put that child in Fairview and pay this Mental Health Division $3,000 a month, then that's what it is. That's what it takes. And that's the child's right, and that's the parent's right. So the school district has some responsibility. Now, I am not an expert in school financing or in paying for the cost of educating handicapped children. That's not my expertise. I'm a collector of child support. It's my job. Somewhere, though, you can get an answer to your question better than the one I've given you. But the school district does have some responsibility.
To further on that, when I was chairman of the Corbett School Board, we had one child that cost the district, I think it was $37,000 a year. And that came out of the local taxpayer money, $37,000. But we were required to do that by the feds, and that's the way life is. I didn't like it then. I'm not sure I like it now, but there's not a whole bunch we can do about it.
See, the problem, Mr. Chair, and the problem, Representative Van Loan, is that since the federal says we have to provide this free, we can't come back and charge the parents for this cost of care, care of you.
That leaves the state open to lawsuits.
That's right. And that's why the Attorney General's office has said, don't go out there and try to collect any of this money because our liability is exposed at that point.
We believe that all the children at Fairview are one way or the other handicapped. Some of them are some of them have multiple handicaps.
Okay, no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're going to do some voting here, man, folks. Why don't we take this one? Yeah, let's move into work session on 2473. Is everybody here? Where's Abel? We're in work session on 2473.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, let's here's Abe Ross.
We don't have a
got another
one somewhere. Shipwreck coming.
Right. Representative Ford.
I'll move House Bill reluctantly. House Bill 2473 to the floor with a few passes.
Okay.